The ravaging of Africa has been enriching Europe and North America for more than 500 years.
First, European empires imposed slavery and colonialism on the continent.
After 1945, the United States took over as the dominant neo-colonial power.
Through the Pentagon and the CIA, the U.S. government has fueled 14 wars in Africa with arms transfers and military training.
It is American invasion, but the U.S. role is everything.
The U.S. has used the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to systematically demolish African economies and health and education sectors.
Par les stratégies de la Banque mondiale, les pauvres seront toujours pauvres, les riches seront toujours riches.
This military and economic war enables the looting of Africa's resources by Western multinational corporations.
Shell is into the politics of Nigeria, you know. One might say we have our independence, but economically, we are still being colonized.
Washington's genocidal imperial strategy has killed more than 26 million Africans, but failed to suppress popular resistance.
We have refused to die. We are living for Africa. No matter what they do, no matter what power they have.
You are listening to The Ravaging of Africa, a four-part documentary series about the destructive impact of U.S. imperialism on the continent. I'm Asad Ismi.
I'm Kristen Schwartz.
Voices and sounds in this series were recorded at the 2007 World Social Forum held in Nairobi, Kenya.
This is Economic War, the second episode in our series. For the next half hour, we highlight the role of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. This episode features voices from Guinea, Zambia, Kenya, and South Africa. Stay tuned.
Washington has fomented not only military conflict in Africa, but also an economic war through its agents, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, known as the Overlords of Africa. The structural adjustment programs imposed by these institutions on 36 African countries since 1980 have devastated the continent, decimating national economies and health and education systems. Structural adjustment programs offer loans on condition that governments drastically reduce public spending, especially on health, education, and food subsidies, in favor of repayment of debt owed to Western banks. Governments must also increase exports of raw materials to the West, encourage foreign investment, and privatize state enterprises. The last two steps mean selling whatever national assets a poor country may have to Western multinational corporations.
Under structural adjustment programs, sub-Saharan Africa's external debt has actually increased more than five times since 1980. This is despite the fact that African countries have paid back four times their 1980 debt to Western banks. In 1997, the United Nations Development Programme stated that in the absence of debt payments, severely indebted African countries could have saved the lives of 21 million people and given 90 million girls and women access to basic education by the year 2000. The All-African Conference of Churches has called the debt, quote, a new form of slavery as vicious as the slave trade, unquote.
After more than two decades of structural adjustment programs, 350 million Africans live in absolute poverty out of 682 million. The number of poor people has increased by 75% since 1994. Life expectancy has dropped by 15% since 1980, and today is 47 years, the lowest in the world. 40% of Africans suffer from malnutrition, and more than half are without safe drinking water. Healthcare spending in the 42 poorest African countries fell by 50% during the 1980s. As a result, healthcare systems have collapsed across the continent, creating near-catastrophic conditions. More than 200 million Africans have no access to health services as hundreds of clinics, hospitals, and medical facilities have been closed. This has left diseases to rage unchecked, leading most alarmingly to an AIDS pandemic. More than 17 million Africans have died of HIV/AIDS, which has created 12 million orphans. 28 million Africans currently have HIV.
About 40% of African children are out of school, and the adult literacy rate in sub-Saharan Africa is 60%, well below the average in developing countries of 73%. More than 140 million young Africans are illiterate. Given the annihilating social impact of structural adjustment programs all over Africa, it's not surprising that Emily Sakazwe, director of the Zambian anti-poverty group Women for Change, has asked, "What would the World Bank and the IMF say if we took them to the World Court in The Hague and accused them of genocide?"
In Guinea, World Bank and IMF structural adjustment programs have left half of the people in poverty and 45% of them unemployed. Yet Guinea, like the Congo, is very rich in natural resources containing half the world's bauxite reserves used to make aluminum, the third largest gold and diamond deposits in Africa, and 4 billion tons of iron ore. Bauxite exports provide 80% of Guinea's foreign exchange, and the state aluminum company has been privatized, with 51% of it being owned by Alcoa, the U.S. multinational, and Alcan, the Canadian corporation. Most revenue from Guinea's main income earner thus leaves the country.
Under pressure from Washington and the International Monetary Fund, the country's U.S.-backed military dictator, Lazana Conte, cut social spending and price subsidies in 2006. This led to mass demonstrations against Conte, culminating in a general strike led by labor unions, which paralyzed Guinea in January 2007. Conte reacted by declaring martial law and unleashing the army, which killed 100 demonstrators. The general strike ended on February 27th after Conte agreed to appoint a new prime minister acceptable to the unions. Since then, the army itself has revolted against Conte, with soldiers looting towns and terrorizing civilians because they say the government hasn't paid their salaries and owes them $93 million.
Bakary Fofana is director of the International Trade Center for Development in Guinea.
Les politiques d'ajustement structurel, les exigences de la Banque mondiale actuellement ont fini par détruire le seul instrument qui est à la disposition des citoyens, instrument collectif, qui est l'État. L'État aujourd'hui est détruit.
The rules set by the IMF are destroying the state in African countries, which is the one common thing that the people have and own.
Justement. Et si l'État est détruit, c'est la justice économique, c'est le développement équilibré au niveau national qui sont totalement détruits.
The government is destroyed, the state is destroyed, and this represents a social and economic injustice.
Privatization enforced by the World Bank in Guinea has created its massive unemployment and impoverishment.
In most African countries, including my own today, there are no more national industries left. They've been taken over by privatization. It is privatization that comes in a situation where there is no local economy. There is no local financial structure in place for a local capitalism to grow and thus create a local industry. So there is no economic development. The fact that there is no local industry and there is no local economy anymore, the effect of this is that there is no income from the resources in a country that is going towards government. There is nothing for the government to take from the workforce and from the resources in the country. So the situation is very bad.
De 1960 à 1983, on avait plus de 200 entreprises nationales.
In Guinea, between 1960 and 1983, there were more than 200 national enterprises. These were enterprises set up by the state. These companies produced everything from shoes to medicines to juice, all consumer products that were used daily. In 1983, the government changed hands and the new government decided to adopt a new form of politics. The World Bank came as consultant and they pushed for the privatization of the 200 enterprises. Today, none of these enterprises, none of these factories are functioning. What is said is that the price for which they sold these was very, very low. What the World Bank suggested was that the government had to get out of the manufacturing sector and leave that in private hands. These enterprises were selling not only within the country, but also selling to neighboring countries. They were functioning well.
Ces entreprises autour ont disparu. Aucune de ces entreprises n'est opérationnelle aujourd'hui.
The World Bank's demand that Guinea cut social spending has caused the collapse of the health and educational systems.
Le taux de couverture sanitaire aujourd'hui est extrêmement bas. puisque la Banque mondiale et le système économique qui a été mis en place empêchent effectivement à la fois à l'État de pouvoir subventionner.
The level of the health system is extremely low. The level of care is very low because the World Bank is preventing the government from funding the infrastructure and funding the rebuilding of the sanitation and health systems.
Aujourd'hui, quand on n'a pas de moyens de santé, vous trouvez des hôpitaux où il n'y a pas de simple mercurochrome pour soigner les gens. Et vous trouvez à l'intérieur des médecins, parce que les médecins sont mal payés, on fait payer à des malades, justement, ceux qui ne peuvent pas payer, alors que c'est l'assistance publique qui devrait le faire.
When people show up at the hospital, there is such a lack of funding that there is simply no medicine. Doctors, because they are being paid very, very poorly, are asking people to pay them. People who don't have anything to pay with. These costs are supposed to be covered by social benefits provided by the government.
Sur le plan éducatif aussi, on en parle moins, c'est qu'aujourd'hui, nous assistons effectivement dans ce domaine aussi, c'est qu'il y a un manque d'emploi. Puisqu'il n'y a pas d'emploi, les jeunes sont désemparés, les écoles ne répondent plus à la demande justement de la société. C'est un déphasage, c'est parce que tout simplement, tout a été détruit par ce système économique incarné et mis en œuvre par justement par la Banque mondiale.
The education system is also failing because there are no jobs afterwards, so young people have given up. Ultimately, there is nothing left. The social structure, economic structure and educational structure are falling apart. They are failing completely and the societies are being slowly destroyed because of this lack of funding and infrastructure in the countries, which is caused by the system and policies put in place by the World Bank.
World Bank and IMF policies have had especially harsh effects on African women. Sarah Longwe is from Zambia. She represents the regional organization African Women's Development and Communications Network.
Women are not represented at places where decisions are being made in terms of the resources, you know, how the resources are used. And also they are not part and parcel of how the political parties run themselves, because there are very few women in the political parties' position. And because of not having a voice at a national level as well as at a political level, we find that the policies, economic and otherwise, have been having adverse effects on women. For instance, when the government started borrowing money from IMF and they accumulated debt, there was no decision made collectively, which included women, to say what we should borrow the money for and how we should use it. And when the debt accumulated, women have been the ones mopping up because of these subsidies have been removed from education, from health, from roads, and these are the very areas which affect women. So women actually have been the ones who have done the subsidies for the economy.
Trade liberalization, extensive privatization, and cuts to health and education spending forced on Zambia by the World Bank have killed tens of thousands of people and made the economy collapse. Zambia holds 10% of the world's copper, which is the country's main income earner. The privatization of copper mines and other enterprises has caused such massive unemployment that only 500,000 Zambians are formally employed out of a population of 11 million. This incredible unemployment has forced women and children into prostitution, which has fueled the AIDS pandemic and created yet more hardship for women. Zambia's life expectancy today is 33 years, the lowest of any country in the world.
People who used to think that they had enough income, they don't have income anymore, and they are totally demoralized, and they've been depression, especially among the men, because to find that they are totally dependent on their wives, and then the wife, what she's doing to keep everybody together is inhuman, to the extent that she has to go early in the morning to the outskirts to buy vegetables and get back, and in between she has to pay the go-betweeners, which would include having sex for the services, or actually the family taking the kids to go in the streets and have sex so they can bring money.
With the kids
have to go out also to get an income. So kids have become stealing, or they become sexually abused if they can be given money, and also that has other effects of drugs, you know, because they're doing things which are really bad and to themselves. So there's a lot of glue sniffing. It's very different from the West because you use drugs which you can, cocaine and things, although there are some who do that, but people have created other form of drugs to forget hunger, to forget the inhuman things they are doing. So they sniff glue, they make the, if I would call it glue, because initially they were sniffing glue, but now they've found a way of creating this, you know, different petroleum, different chemicals, you know, they mix, it could be paraffin, and then it gets into a strong mixture, and they sniff that, and it for a while it takes all the misery away.
The devastating HIV/AIDS pandemic in Zambia has been declared a national emergency by the government. 17% of Zambians are HIV positive, and there are over 700,000 children who are AIDS orphans.
Some also traditional cons have come into play and have even come with even worse things, you know, like for instance, you can be cured for AIDS if you sleep with a virgin, if you sleep with somebody who is 70 years old. So nowadays there are gang rapes of little kids, gang rapes of old women.
World Bank mandated trade liberalization has destroyed the agricultural sector also, thereby causing the expansion of urban slums as well as encouraging the spread of HIV/AIDS. By allowing cheap crop and food imports into African countries, trade liberalization has displaced local farmers who cannot compete. Many such men are forced to move to urban slums for work, where they get infected with HIV due to unprotected sex, and then spread the disease to their wives in their home village. In Kenya's capital, Nairobi, about 60% of the population lives in slums.
Caroline Adeyambo is a resident of Madare, one of Nairobi's oldest slums, where she works as a volunteer with the Madare Mothers Development Center. Caroline is a home-based caregiver who takes care of HIV/AIDS patients.
You know, we as volunteers, we are the ones overburdened with work. The health caregivers are doing nothing at all because they wait for their salary at the end of the month. Whether there is a sick person there, they don't care. It is upon us, we caregivers, to go and take care of the sick person in the hospital as well as back at home. I give care to the bedridden patients who are living positively or without AIDS or with AIDS. As volunteers, we take them to the hospitals. We look for the relatives if they are near. We dedicate the work to the relatives so that we don't get overburdened. But you know, it comes to a time when we have to go back to our pockets, because when you go to visit a patient, sometimes you find there's nothing, completely nothing in the house. So you have to go back to your pocket, produce some little cash to help the patient. In the other hand, you are not employed. You also, at your side, you have a need. So it becomes difficult there. And otherwise, we are happy because we are happy to see our fellow friends improve and they are back to life again.
Kenya has only one national referral hospital, the Kenyatta National Hospital, in a country of over 31 million people. The combined effect of the AIDS epidemic and tuberculosis on Kenya has been catastrophic, given the destruction of the health system by World Bank-sanctioned cutbacks. More than half of Kenya's hospital beds are occupied by patients with HIV/AIDS-related infections, and life expectancy in the country has been reduced to 48 years.
Kenya was the first country in Africa to come under a World Bank Structural Adjustment Program in 1980. After 27 years of adjustment, more than half of the population lives in poverty, and Kenya is 148 out of 177 countries on the United Nations Development Program's Human Development Index, which measures a nation's development in terms of life expectancy, education, and standard of living. Most Kenyans consume less food calories today than they did 30 years ago. Under World Bank IMF pressure, the Kenyan government has recently privatized Kenya Railways, resulting in the layoff of 4,000 workers.
Njoki Getetwa is coordinator of Kenya Debt Relief Network.
IMF and World Bank in this country, with their structural adjustment program, has completely destroyed the social fabric of this country. What is important is that is the insistence that workers must be sacked. You increase employment in a country that is trying to generate employment. You increase frustrations in a country which is trying to hold together the social fabric. You increase social turmoil in a country that is supposed to be stable. Because once you destroy, you sack somebody from jobs, what you're doing in effect is to tell that country to go to hell and suffer. You're causing social breakdown.
The World Bank is insisting on even privatizing as essential a resource as Kenya's water, in spite of the disastrous consequences of this policy all over the world. These include sharp price increases, greater unemployment, corruption, and severe declines in accessibility, service, and quality. Already, only 14% of Kenyan households have piped in water.
Through privatization, the World Bank has encouraged massive corruption in Africa and the rest of the South. As author Sue Hawley explains in her report on corruption written for the British NGO Corner House, the growth of corruption across the globe is largely the result of rapid privatization of public enterprises, along with reforms to downsize and undervalue civil services pushed on developing countries by the World Bank, the IMF, and Western governments supporting their transnational corporations. Hawley estimates that Western corporations pay $80 billion in bribes a year.
Joseph Stiglitz, former chief economist at the World Bank, called privatization briberization. He spoke about how some politicians gladly sold their electricity and water companies. You could see their eyes widen, he said, at the possibility of commissions for shaving a few billion off the sale price.
Kenya's U.S.-backed ruling class is well known for its astounding corruption, especially in the era of President Daniel Arap Moi, who ruled for 24 years. Moi set up a kleptocracy and assassinated and tortured his opponents. Under him, the Kenyan elite and Western multinationals monopolized Kenya's wealth, making it one of the most unequal nations in the world. The richest 10% of the population control almost half of Kenyan wealth, while the poorest 10% have only 1%. Under the direction of the World Bank, privatization became another mechanism of corruption to increase the wealth of the elite and Western companies.
Mwai Kibaki, the current president, has been beset by two major corruption scandals that have forced the resignation of three of his ministers. Beginning in 1992, on the insistence of Western governments and the World Bank, the Kenyan government put up 207 companies for sale in one of the biggest privatizations in Africa. Many companies have been sold far below their market value, resulting in enormous losses to the state. Not only has the World Bank encouraged corruption in Kenya, it has directly participated in it. In May 2002, the bank's officer in charge of Kenya's roads program pleaded guilty to bribery.
For example, a company like a telecommunication industry is privatized. Once a company like Kenya Airways is privatized, once anything is privatized, it is always a player. It's always an interplay of strategic forces and interest to take control of that given industry. We have seen industry in this country which were privatized when the business class and some people in the business class are very well prepared. We are talking about a situation where they are privatized when multinationals are very, very much aware. So the people who come exactly to take these industries, it's not even the people, it's strategic players in the corporate world. And this corporate world, they part with a lot of money to support operatives within the government. It means that there was a lot of resources and interests that were exchanged basically to tilt the balance and to generate corruption and bad governance.
Since most African countries are largely agricultural, the distribution of land is the most important economic issue on the continent. In South Africa, 13 years after the end of formal apartheid, a tiny white elite still owns most of the land, while millions of black farmers are landless. 87% of South Africa's land is owned by white, Dutch, and British colonizers, as well as by foreigners living outside the country. Many of these are multinational corporations such as Anglo-American, De Beers, and Monsanto. Whites make up 12% of South Africa's population.
The World Bank is setting South Africa's land policy and has told the African National Congress government not to expropriate land or it will be economically punished. The bank insists that the decision to sell land should be up to the owners and the government should pay the high prices that they demand. Mainly because of the denial of land, 61% of black South Africans live in poverty, and close to 40% of all South Africans are unemployed. Archbishop Desmond Tutu has warned, quote, "We are sitting on a powder keg," unquote.
Molefe Pilane is an organizer for the Landless People's Movement in South Africa.
We created this organization after we realized that the issue of land in South Africa has been ignored even by the new rulers of South Africa who won independence in 1994 from the colonizers, the Dutch colonizers. They were then advised by the World Bank and the IMF to say that they should not take the land which was taken from the indigenous people in the past. They should not take it away from the colonizers, but instead they should use money, the state coffers, to actually buy the land from the colonizers or the settlers. So some of the settlers have been pushing the prices of the land deliberately high, knowing that they will make profit out of that. So the process has actually stopped, because the government does not have enough resources to buy the land. But also, if they try to amend the law to say that they're gonna maybe expropriate some of the land, the value of the rand, which is our currency, collapses because of the international, you know, connections of the IMF and the World Bank and the multinationals. So that's the situation that we find ourselves, that the multinationals, the US, through its agencies of the IMF and the World Bank, is forcing African countries to actually buy land which was taken from the settlers with high prices.
The South African Landless People's Movement's tactics focus on education.
So that's a very difficult situation that we find ourselves in. But the resistance has been there. We've been organizing people around the issue of land and educating people about how land is important so that it can help them to grow food, to take them out of poverty. People are starting to understand that they have to stand up on their own and confront this U.S. imperialism that is being, you know, pushed down their throat through their agencies of IMF and the World Bank and other international monetary agencies.
You have been listening to Economic War, the second episode of the documentary series The Ravaging of Africa.
The Ravaging of Africa is dedicated to the memory of Patrice Lumumba.
This series was written by Asad Ismi and produced by Kristen Schwartz. Go to www.asadismi.ws, that's www.asadismi.ws, for more information or to download the series.
Translation by Maziar Mahajir at Toronto Conversation Corner and Farid Omar. Voiceover by Benedicta Madavo.
Theme music is Nerbalankina by Captain Yaba from Ghana.
The series was funded by Canadian Union of Public Employees Local 3903, QP National, Canadian Union of Postal Workers National, GovW North Bay Local, Canadian Labour Congress, Public Service Alliance of Canada, Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association, Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, and Mining Watch Canada.
Thank you for listening.